Good evening and welcome to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. I'm John Tanza on this pre-recorded program, very remote from Washington. Here are some of the stories we are covering today, Thursday, April 1st, 2021. 5 people are killed on the Juba Nimule Road.
The leading truck, the truck which was in the front, was shot but was managed to escape the ambush with 3 wounded, a driver and a town boy with a woman.
And rebels of the National Salvation Front deny attacking commuters on the Juba Yei Road.
The person who you might have collected that information might be having his own reasons for saying that, but most of the civilians in the countryside knows exactly the behavior of the forces of National Salvation Front. We have been kind for the last 4 years to the citizens.
We'll have these stories and more coming up on South Sudan in Focus. Five people were killed and 3 others injured when gunmen ambushed a truck at Kitu on the Juba Nimule Road. The spokesperson of the South Sudan People's Defense Forces accused the rebels of the National Salvation Front for carrying out the attack. For VOA News, Winnie Chirino reports from Juba.
Colonel Santo Domich, the deputy spokesperson for South Sudan People's Defense Force, says he was informed by an officer at a military checkpoint on the Juba Nimule Road that 3 trucks were ambushed about 6 a.m. in the Kitu area. Domich says the trucks were returning to Uganda when gunmen attacked the convoy. He says the passengers and driver of the first truck survived.
The leading truck, the truck which was in the front, was shot but was managed to escape the ambush with 3 wounded, a driver and a town boy with a woman. They were able to escape, but the other 2 trucks were burned, and within those trucks, there are 5 civilians were burned to death with the truck, because the other truck has got 2 people or 2 passengers, and the other one also has 3 passengers.
Domit says he couldn't confirm the nationalities of those killed because their bodies were burned beyond recognition. He says the army is sending a team to investigate.
There are some measures being taken for the forces, specialized forces, to go there and try to evacuate the burned bodies and try to understand exactly what has happened.
Domit says the army believes National Salvation Front forces are to blame for today's attack, noting the group was active along Juba Nimule Road in the past.
According to SSPDF, they wanted really to give a signal that they are there, and they wanted to confirm their presence in the area. But if there is any other reason, then they should talk for themselves.
Domit says NAS has repeatedly violated the cessation of hostilities agreement it signed with the government. Last week, the SSPDF accused NAS of attacking people along the Juba Kajukeji Road, a claim NAS spokesperson Suba Samuel denied in a press statement released today. For VOA News, I am Winnie Sirino in Juba.
The rebels of the National Salvation Front say their fighters have not attacked commuter vehicles along the Juba Yei or Kaya Yei Road. The spokesperson of the National Salvation Front, Suba Samuel, says areas around Yei County have South Sudanese People's Defense Force, former rebels of the SPLM-IO, armed cattle pastoralists from Central Equatoria and Jonglei State. Suba says the road from Juba to Uganda via Yei has multiple armed groups.
SSPDF in Otogo, Payam, and the areas of Lata, Kularima, and Umbachi areas came and attacked our positions. Our forces are aware of their movement, counter their attack. But then immediately after those failure of the regime to uproot our forces, they started going into villages, causing looting, burning huts, and this caused the displacement of the civilians. Almost 2,000 moved into Yei and others crossed to Congo. This is actually what happened.
When our reporter in Yei spoke to the displaced persons who ran from the areas you are mentioning here, they told our reporters that they were under attack from both government troops and rebels of the National Salvation.
The person who you might have collected that information might be having his own reasons for saying that, but most of the civilians in the countryside knows exactly the behavior of the forces of National Salvation Front. We have been kind for the last 4 years to the citizens, and because these are the people, and we took the guns for their own behalf. So it beats any logic for us also to turn against our own people.
So, but Samuel, during a conflict, bullets fly left and right. And you cannot say that your group, the National Salvation Front, does not target citizens. I think when fighting erupts, the bullets don't discriminate.
No, if it is saying that they are running away because of the fight, because, of course, a stray bullet can land on anything. It can land on a person, it can land on any material, and that's why they're running. Yes, that is justified, because if there is fighting, then everybody has to take cover. But then any intentional reason, for intentional reason to cause harm to the civilians, I think this is something which is not within the doctrine of a National Salvation Front.
Let's talk about your group, the National Salvation Front. People around South Sudan are wondering and asking, why are you fighting?
Tanza, you know very well, since 2018 in Khartoum, when we moved out from Khartoum Peace Agreement, we are always saying that unless the problem in South Sudan is addressed in the way that it focuses on the looking at the root causes of the conflict, then there will be no peace in South Sudan. So the ISIS agreement failed to deliver that. And all along, our argument is that we need to dialogue. And this dialogue must be focusing on addressing the root causes of the problem. And when we are dialoguing, there must be serious political will from all the actors. And this time, the government, of course, must show that they are serious to bring peace.
You were talking about a lack of political will to resolve the conflict in South Sudan, and you're specifically pointing at the government saying they don't have the political will. And you're also talking about the root causes of the conflict. These are buzzwords that I've been hearing for the last 5 years during this crisis in South Sudan. What do you mean by root causes of the conflict in South Sudan?
You see, Tanza, even when you go to the hospital, the doctor will have to ask you the causes of your sickness. And it is not enough to look at the symptoms and then he prescribes the medicine. He asks you and you find out exactly what might have triggered the ailment that you are suffering from. So we want to address the problem in South Sudan and come out with a peace which is durable and sustainable. We need to look at the root causes of the conflict in the country. We have a problem of governance in that country, Tanza, which need to be addressed. We have a problem of security in that country that need to be addressed. We have a problem of tribalism in that country that need to be addressed. We have a problem of corruption in that country that need to be addressed. We have a problem of land, where people's land have been occupied, people are dispossessed of their land, that needs to be addressed in that country. We have a problem with reforms. We have a problem with the constitution in that country that need to be addressed. So all these things constitute the genuine problem that need to be addressed.
Talk to me about the recent clashes and kidnapping on the Juba Yei Road. You listen to what the mayor of Koboko town was saying in our broadcast of Wednesday. Those who escaped the attack on the Kaya Yei Road were saying that they were ambushed by rebels.
In Central Guterres said there are multiple armed groups that are operating there. One, of course, SSPDF. Two, SPLM-IO, specifically in the areas of Kejikeji. Three, there are SSPDF and SPLA-IO who are in the bushes, who are actually doing charcoal business, who are deserted, who have deserted their units. We have cattle keepers from Jungle State, from Bor, and we have from Kerekeka. They are all in the five counties of Central Equatorial State, including National Salvation Front. Now, when we talk of the roads from Kaya up to Juba, in every 10 to 15 kilometers, the SSPDF has a checkpoint. Now, when it comes to insecurity in this road, it is very difficult to know who is doing what, at what time, and where.
But, Suba, you are also in the area, and you are armed. How would you convince Ugandans that those who attacked them are government soldiers?
We have been controlling those areas. We have forces in those areas for the last 4 years. And motorists have been moving all along these roads without any hindrances. So there must be something fishy somewhere. So somebody is trying to wash his dirty linen on behalf of National Salvation Front. And of course, we know this is SSPDF. and their allied militia. Recently, we have defeated them in Mukaya, we have defeated them in Umbashi, and usually, when these people are defeated, they usually refer their anger to the innocent civilians.
But it's an open secret that your forces are along the road from Kaya to Juba. It's an open secret.
As I've said in the beginning, our forces are everywhere, and we don't have a permanent base. We have a mobile unit that move from one location to another. Because we are also avoiding attacks from the SSPDF. You know, we are not well equipped, so we cannot be able to have a standing position on locations.
I cannot speak for the mayor of Koboko, but he has been on record saying that the survivors of the attack said those who attacked them are rebels.
As I put it, there are many armed groups in the bushes. So which rebels? Which rebels that? It's not only National Salvation Front who are in the bushes.
The former rebels of the SPLA-IO signed an agreement with the government. Government troops are government troops. The only non-state actors in the areas where these attacks are taking place are the rebels of the National Salvation Front. Why would you want to spin on this matter?
How do they know that those are rebels? Is it written on their bodies that those are rebels? Or are there their physical appearances that show that these are rebels? It's not a... Not a rebel. And even when you talk of the agreement which is there, what is this recent attacks in Kejikeji between the SSVDF and the SPLM-IO? What does it mean? Does it, those skirmishes show that there is peace? What about the recent attack in Eastern Equatoria to the IO containment site? Does it mean there is a peace there? So there is a lot of complications in that country.
That's Suba Samuel, the spokesperson of the National Salvation Front. He spoke with me from an undisclosed location in northern Uganda on Wednesday. Dozens of companies contracted by the South Sudan government to supply services, food and non-food items at cantonment and training sites are demanding more than $17 million US for services provided in 2019 through to 2020. Stephen Parkwall, the National Minister for Peace Building, says the government has no money to pay the suppliers. For VOA News, Dingma got reports from Juba.
Representatives of 32 companies say, despite signed contracts with South Sudan's Transitional Committee, led by Presidential Advisor for Security, Tut Keogat Luak, none of them have been paid. Some suppliers say the government's failure to pay has left their companies in debt after they borrowed money to procure the goods and services rendered. Some even say company executives have been jailed for failing to settle their debts. A representative of one of the companies that supplied food items who wants to remain anonymous for fear of reprisals says while some suppliers have received partial percentage of the total amount that's overdue, others have yet to receive any payment. The companies say they wrote a letter to President Salva Kiir Mayardit in January this year asking him to intervene but received no response. Riak Roy, one of the companies demanding payment, who also represents the 32 unpaid business owners, says suppliers have repeatedly reached out to the National Transitional Committee to no avail. He says suppliers have also contacted Gatluak many times.
In every month, they promise. They used to tell us to come next week, tomorrow, after 1 week, after 2 weeks, and then nothing has been done up to now. It reached to the standard that some of the suppliers has been put in jail by those whom they borrow money from them.
Another supplier who prefers to be identified only as Simon for safety reasons says his colleague was attacked earlier this year for failing to pay off the loans he took out to buy goods for South Sudan's training and cantonment sites.
One of us was attacked on January 16th, Saturday night, in his house in front of his children with pangas and machetes. He was almost killed in front of his children for failing to pay the debts that he has. So unless, if Honorable Tut wants something bad to happen to the suppliers who are local, he has to clear us. Because whatever we are going through, there's no one we can run to and cry.
Stephen Parkwall, South Sudan's Minister for Peace Building, says the government has no money due to the country's economic crisis.
The COVID-19 situation has brought about almost economic collapse, and we are not able to pay all our contractors, but they will be paid. Well, I cannot speculate about when, but it is an obligation of the government to pay the contractors who supply food here.
Both National Finance Minister Athian Ding Athian and First Undersecretary in the Finance Ministry Garang Majak have not responded to repeated calls for comment on this story. For VOA News, I am Ding Magot in Juba.
You are listening to South Sudan in Focus on The Voice of America. Coming up, some residents of Juba Town express concerns about COVID-19 vaccine. Find out why after this break.
What do you think? People speak out on important questions. The question today.
Tell me about your favorite person.
My favorite person is my best friend. I've been best friends since when we're children and we've grown up. We are in tertiary level and we are still very close and good friends.
My favorite person is my friend. And she's a lady who really knows her worth. She knows her values. She stands for her values and all. She doesn't compromise.
My mom is my favorite person. She inspires me. She gives me the courage to do anything that I want.
Me, I'm a fan of basketball. I play basketball. And the person I like and impresses me too much is LeBron James. I follow him so much and I like his game.
What do you think? A daily discussion of important questions from VOA.
You are listening to South Sudan in Focus on The Voice of America. Some residents of the South Sudan's capital, Juba, are expressing fear about the side effects of COVID-19 vaccines. A Ministry of Health official says benefits of vaccines outweighs any potential side effects. For VOA News, Viola Elias reports from Juba.
Juba resident Daniel Lado says most South Sudanese worry about getting vaccinated because they believe the vaccine has severe side effects, which they think could result in death. He says that the National Task Force on COVID-19 and the National Health Ministry must do a better job of educating people about COVID vaccines.
You need proper education and proper explanation from the Ministry of Health for people to accept. So that's why I'm not anti-injection, rather vaccination. But for me individually, I will still research about it first before I accept it. I'm not saying no, I'm not saying yes, but I will research first.
Dr. Richard Laku, incident manager for COVID-19 at the National Health Ministry, says the ministry will explain to everyone who gets the shot about the potential side effects, all of which are mild.
The side effects that are documented so far is like other vaccines. You'll have a bit of side pain at the side where the jab is done, fever, fatigue. These are general kind of things that normally happen. But there might be some adverse effect that might be serious. We have heard in Europe, people are saying that there is a clot associated with this, and I think this is where most of the people are afraid.
Dr. Lako says studies carried out in Europe indicated that there was no direct evidence linking blood clots with the vaccine.
They vaccinated over 27 million people. 27 million. Out of these 27 million, only 40 that are reported to have developed this. So this is not even a significant number based on all the type of vaccines that have been done. Again, these 40, they claim to have 18 who died. These 18, they have done autopsy. They find these people had the clots, but there was no direct association between the vaccines and the clots.
Dr. Lako says government officials will be among the first South Sudanese to get the vaccine to build confidence among citizens. He is encouraging the public to get the shot, saying the vaccine reduces transmission and prevent COVID-19 deaths.
To all of us go for this vaccination, will reduce the risk of this virus moving from one person to another. And this is very important because now we are seeing new variants happening, because when the virus moves from one person to another, infect another, it changes the shape and the color and become virulent.
Yesterday, a team of medical experts made a presentation in Juba on the AstraZeneca vaccine, which President Kiir and members of the unity government are scheduled to receive in a few days. After the presentation, President Kiir gave the go-ahead for the health authorities to prepare to officially launch the distribution of vaccination across the country. Juba resident David Lubang says now that the vaccine is available, he is ready to be vaccinated and urge people to stop spreading rumors about the vaccine.
I'm enlightened enough because the president declared it good for people to get vaccinated. You know, it has been perceived that the COVID-19 vaccine is not good because of some side effects.
Health ministry officials say they expect to roll out the vaccine next week. For VOA News, I am Viola Elias in Juba.
From Juba, we move to Washington, where the United States Institute of Peace signed a memorandum of understanding with Sudan's transitional government to help Sudan's government and civil society in areas of peace building, good governance, and the participation of young men and women in the search for peace in the country. For VOA News, Nabil Biagio has more from Washington.
The president of USIP, Liz Grandi, signed the MOU with Sudan's ambassador to the United States, Nuruddin Sati, on Tuesday. Joe Tucker is USIP's senior expert for the Greater Horn of Africa. He explains to VOA what the MOU is about.
On the most basic level, it establishes sort of a presence for USIP in Sudan and sort of looks at some of the expectations between both sides for future programming, for work, for USIP and the government sort of priorities to work together. And, you know, that's, of course, a technical sort of explanation. But I think writ large, it really is a recognition, frankly, of the historic transition that's underway in Sudan right now. And sort of by extension, the United States commitment to peace, inclusivity, good governance in Sudan.
Tucker says the MOU will allow USIP to extend a range of programs that it works on to be implemented in Sudan, and which will support Sudan's transition to civilian and democratic rule.
Advancing, women's involvement in peace and security issues. We have a very dynamic program working with youth and peace builders on nonviolent action on peace building. There will be sort of continuing and expanding work on those levels. I think there will be continuing and expanding dialogue in the center in Khartoum with key actors, not only in government, but in national civil society, about really harnessing the government's ability to sort of explain in detail its priorities of this transition, and to really, I think, keep in mind and investigate what are citizen priorities.
Sudanese Ambassador to the United States, Nuruddin Sati, who signed the MOU on behalf of Sudan's Ministry of Foreign Affairs, told VOA that the MOU will deepen U.S. engagement with Sudan, both on the level of government as well as civil society.
In the months ahead, USP will be working with the government of Sudan, the Foreign Ministry of Sudan, with public institutions, civil society, the private sector, with experts and practitioners to establish and deepen genuine partnerships and through these to inform U.S. policies. On our side, of course, we have expressed our readiness and our support, to provide all assistance possible for USIP to do its job, bearing in mind that USIP intends also to open an office in Khartoum. And to send some of its staff to be stationed there.
Ambassador Sati says USIP presence in and engagement with Sudan will strengthen transitional government and institutions, something that Sudan sorely needs.
Support to the civil society is, of course, very important. Support to the civilian transition in Sudan, helping to build institutions to reinforce transparency and accountability of those institutions of governance, I think, is key to us. And these are some, of course, of the common objectives that we adhere to, that we share with the United States, and would like to be reflected in the cooperation between our two countries.
USIP has been working in Sudan for more than 30 years, helping Sudanese peace builders who promote nonviolent action, justice, and security. For VOA News, I'm Nabil Biagio in Washington.
Still on Sudan, a delegation from the African Union Peace and Security Council is in Khartoum to monitor the ongoing political transition in the country. AU officials praised the Sudanese transitional government for progress made in restoring peace and stability in the country. For VOA News, Michael Atit reports from Khartoum.
The African Union's Peace and Security Council delegation, which arrived in Khartoum Wednesday, met with Sudanese authorities who described the progress that has been accomplished in the country's political transition. Speaking to reporters shortly after meeting with Mohamed Hamdan Dogolo, the deputy head of the Sudanese Sovereign Council, Jean Kamau, the Kenyan ambassador to Ethiopia, who currently chairs the African Union's Peace and Security Council, said the delegation's two-day visit is aimed at encountering the transitional government's political progress made over the past year.
Would like to commend the Sudan for the progress that has been recorded with the ongoing political transition from the signing of the Juba Peace Agreement to all the ongoing efforts that the transition government has put in place to secure peace in the Sudan and to also build strong institutions and processes which will anchor the political transition here in the Sudan.
Kamau praised the government for what he called progressive development in Sudan. She says if Sudan remains stable, it will improve regional peace and security as well.
We also note that the effort that has been put in place is very, very important for the Peace and Security Council to see how African problems are being addressed by Africans in a very meaningful and committed way, and that the lessons drawn from the Sudan will be very important for us to understand how we can really intensify our efforts in our different countries.
The AU delegation's visit to Khartoum coincided with the arrival of U.S. Special Envoy Donald Booth, who is in the Sudanese capital to monitor the country's peace process. Speaking to reporters yesterday shortly after his meeting with Ambassador Booth, Sudan's chairperson of the Peace Commission, Suleiman Dabello, said, aside from discussing the Sudan peace plan, he and Booth also talked about the status of refugees and internally displaced persons in Darfur.
He got a lot of answers to a lot of inquiries and he was briefed on the progress made on the implementation of the Juba peace deal.
Dabello says Ambassador Booth reiterated the commitment of the U.S. and other partners to support the transitional period in Sudan. He says the U.S. Special Envoy was pleased with the level of progress made by the transitional government in achieving lasting peace and gaining the trust of the international community.
He promised that Sudan has been removed from the list that has been imposed on and that Sudan is now open to the international community and the United States and Troika countries will do what they could to support the transitional government in Sudan to fully implement the peace deal, economy recovery and other developments.
The African Union's Peace and Security Council delegation is expected to visit Darfur today to see the security situation on the ground after the withdrawal of the joint United Nations and African Union's peacekeeping mission in December last year. For VOA News, I am Michael Atid in Khartoum.
That's all we prepared for you this Thursday. Let us know what you think about this show. Our WhatsApp number is +1 202 630-8011. We now take you back to Sudan with this song, Shane. I'm John Tanza in Washington. Thanks for being part of our evening. Remember to always wash your hands with soap, practice social distancing, and wear a mask when you're in public places to protect you and others from getting COVID-19. Do not escape from COVID-19 quarantine centers because there is no cure for coronavirus. Join us again tomorrow for another edition of South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America.
صليتنا فيه لغير ما لكن شان
Share with the ship, I say I'll be share with the ship.